We have been working on this probably ever since they imposed their will. We began executing that war plan. And what does that mean? That means taking down anti-ship missiles at distance, right. Long-range ballistic missiles at distance. Right. The Shahid drones can go almost 1,000 miles, so we're going deep into Iran that can access the Straits of Hormuz, and then we're working close in to deal with what close in? Mine layers, small boats that could be suicide boats to interfere with shipping. They could fire drones from that small boat as well, or fire other kinds of short-range missiles at a boat. Mm. All of that is being exercised.
That is General Jack Keane breaking down exactly what's going on. So he's in touch with the Israelis. He's in touch with the U.S., military team and the strategists. And he's got 60 years of knowledge dating back to Vietnam. Andy Markoff joins us now, retired Marine, Special Forces officer, now runs SMAC Technologies. Andy, welcome.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Hey, first off, I mean, we have two objectives that just remain undone. I guess getting the uranium and opening up the strait. Am I crazy to think that if we're going to do it, doing it at the same time might be to our advantage?
I think there's always an advantage to shocking the system simultaneously. And I think, you know, we need to get this, you know, conflict resolved. I think that it makes sense.
So if I was to give you the assignment with the Strait, I know about, you know, unmanned vehicles. I know about the fast boats. We know about the mines. If those are the obstacles, how do you handle it?
I mean, I think that, you know, we have the ability to, you know, collect information about where these things are. We've obviously been like successful at like decimating, you know, the vast majority of like Iran's conventional military. And I think it's really more of the same, but just finishing the job, especially like looking at like those anti-ship cruise missiles that could threaten the strait to get it open. And I think, you know, we have some of the technology implemented today, but, you know, I think you had a conversation with Jamie Dimon where we talked about, you know, we've got the innovation, but we maybe don't have the execution. I think Jamie's right in that, like, the tools exist today to make decisions, you know, faster and to be able to work as a coalition, but we haven't fully implemented them. And I think that's a lot of the focus needs to be on how do we actually make better decisions quicker and faster in a more optimal way across both the U.S. forces and with our coalition partners and allies.
I mean, you're talking about the mass production of these great weapons, whether it's interceptors, whether it's drone technology or anti-drone technology for an affordable price, right? You have the innovation, but do you have the manufacturing?
I think that the manufacturing is really important. I know Jamie talked about that, and he's right. I mean, we absolutely need more weapons, more munitions. We need to be able to make them faster. But I think, you know, that's going to take some time. I think that, you know, there's something that we can do sooner, which is make more optimal decisions with the things that we do have. It's a concept we would call decision dominance. But how do you take all this information, fuse it, analyze it, and make optimal decisions right now with the limited resources that we have? And the technology exists today to do that.
Aren't we already seeing that with the use of AI in our targeting?
I think we're starting to see it, but I think we're just kind of like, you know, paper deep in what we could do. And we started to see AI get implemented, like, to make these types of decisions. But I think, you know, there's a lot more we could do. I think AI needs to be adopted more broadly, but, you know, not just within our forces. Like, we need to be able to do it with our coalition partners and allies. I mean, today there's not a good machine-to-machine solution with our partners and allies. And, like, you know, we can't do this alone. We need to be able to work in multiple theaters with our partners, and we need to be able to have machine-to-machine solutions to use each other's resources effectively. And I think that's really important. And that's one of the areas I think AI could help a lot. I mean, another is understanding the trade-offs between moving assets from one theater to this theater and what the implication is across, you know, security across the world. It's really hard to make those trade-off decisions and understand those implications today. And I think that's another area that AI can really help.
So in other words, you saw our assets off the coast of Venezuela for months. And now it's in the Persian Gulf. And we got to take those marine ships. We're in Japan. So do you don't think we're doing a good job understanding while we put our assets in those different areas, what is vulnerable?
I think we don't have an ability to make that like calculus that, I mean, doing that, like, you know, detailed time space plan on what is the implication if I move this group from here to here, not just over the next 2 weeks, but 6 months, 2 years, 10 years. There's not an easy way to do that calculus today. And I think that's one of the real promises with AI is to help us get back to campaigning. I mean, we like campaigning, you know, being able to weigh the trade-offs of like tactical decisions in one theater versus another theater and make informed trade-offs is critical. And that is a really, really difficult thing to do.
So, and you're saying too, that get our partners involved with the innovation prospects. So I guess the UK has got their military strategists and the France has their mayors. Instead of judging them, just fold them in. And if they're not going to do their part, make it public. But they can't keep up with us in many ways. But maybe we use some of those creative thinkers and bring them in so they understand their role in this whole thing.
Absolutely. Like I think we need to bring them in. I think, you know, I've certainly served with our NATO partners and allies when I was in Iraq. I've served with them in Afghanistan. I mean, we've worked closely over the years on the global war on terror. I think like with what's going on in the world today, we need to continue that. But it's not just working together. It's how do we integrate technology so we can make decisions faster together, make optimal decisions together. And I think that technology integration is really important.
So how do you judge our campaign so far from the people that you know and from what you've seen? How's it going?
I mean, I think that, you know, our military has done a tremendous job of, you know, decimating, you know, Iran's conventional forces. I mean, I think like we are, you know, again, the best in the world at doing that. And I think we've proven it again. I think, you know, there's still some cleanup to be done. I know we've all talked about the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, obviously there's still a threat there, but will it return immediately in the next couple of weeks to where it was before the conflict started? Like probably not, but can we get it to a manageable level with some focused strikes? I do think that we're capable of doing that.
I'm Ram Reddy, and I'm running for governor because it's time for something different. I believe the political system is corrupted by dark money, special interests, and inside deals. If I do not deliver, I will not run again.
Paid for by Ready for Governor.
So knowing that, Andy, and the role politics plays for the first time, I know when things got dicey in Iraq, there was a real divide, even among Republicans. Man, I don't think this surge will work. I think we lost in Iraq. Remember, Andy, the leader, the majority leader in Harry Reid, the majority leader at the time in the Senate, he said, everybody know that the war is lost. Now, you guys are actually fighting the war, but you're hearing politics. So the campaign, by almost every military strategist I talk to, is talking very positive about the campaign. But this is what people are saying on TV about it. And tell me if it wears on the warfighter and their family. Cut 7.
I mean, he sounded and looked quite old, quite low energy, quite exhausted, and not particularly focused, again, which is not that surprising.
And to me, that underscores and is like this Sharpie underline for his two biggest political problems with the war. He makes clear in those statements that he makes tonight that this is a war of his choosing. We didn't have to be there. We just went to help. Help who? Why?
There was a bit of an, you know, inherent contradiction in saying that the objectives are very nearly complete. It's almost over. But we're going to attack Iran into the Stone Age over the next few weeks.
Trump is on course to get a thank you card from the Ayatollahs this year. This speech was a disaster.
So how does that affect the families and fighters?
I mean, I do think that for the most part, I mean, when I was deploying, like a lot of us try to just stay out of like listening to the media and kind of just focus on like the mission. And that's really, I think, you know, most of the families are focused on thinking about their loved ones, supporting their loved ones that are deployed. You know, the people that are deployed are focused on the mission. And honestly, when I was deployed, I don't know that I ever even watched the news because I was so busy just thinking about what we were doing. I mean, I think, you know, to echo kind of, you know, the point that Jamie Dimon made, I mean, Iran's been a problem for 47 years for us. This is not like a new thing. They undermined us in every theater that we fought in, that I fought in, like in all, you know, whether it was in Iraq or Afghanistan. This is not a new, they're not a new problem that like happened overnight. And so I think, you know, a lot of, I can't speak for all of the people that are deployed today. I can speak for myself. And we're like, they've always been, you know, in that region, problem number one.
And we're a volunteer force, Andy, and anyone who said, I'm going to join up for the military and didn't think that Iran possibly could pop up as a place of confrontation really was divorced from what was going on in the world.
And you probably don't hear about that, you know, but like, you know, those of us as we're deployed, like we're living under that. We've lived under that threat on deployment, you know, in both theaters. And so I think like it's just been it's been something that we've dealt with for a long time.
Right. All right. So we'll see what happens. How long do you expect this to last?
I think that with focused strikes on focused effort to finish off, I think, you know, the real conventional threat to the Strait. I mean, I think that we could see a significant drop in risk, as the president said, in a few weeks. You know, as far as like stability in the region, I mean, that's a much longer problem. And I won't pretend to guess how long that, you know, that mm-hmm. takes. But I do think the conventional threat, I think, can be dealt with as it relates to the Strait. Again, not going to be exactly as low risk maybe as it was before the conflict kicked off, but I think at a manageable level soon.
Talking to guys like you, I know how much respect you have for the like Australians and the UK. I very rarely hear people say they're not great to fight with. But I do think there's something about the Israelis who have equal motivation. They're not there to help America. They're there to work with us. And we really have, for the most part, the same objective. We just want to, I think both countries just want to live in peace, want to compete economically, not militarily. So I think there's something about the quality of the fighter that Americans are fighting with. I think when everyone comes back and tells this story, it's going to be kind of pretty unique.
I agree. I mean, and I've been fortunate to fight alongside a lot of our NATO partners and allies. So it was a, you know, true privilege of my career. I never had the opportunity to fight beside the Israelis, but I mean, I do think that they're a truly unique and great partner. And I mean, you know, Iran is, you know, to a degree personal for me and for the people that I deployed with, but like not to the degree that it is, you know, for Israel. And so I think that like they, you know, we're very aligned in a way that, you know, I think is great.
They've wounded thousands and killed at least 600 during the Iraq War. You could argue that the insurgency wouldn't have not nearly been as potent had Iran not fomented the unrest like they did. Andy Markoff, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
You got it.